Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
A lot of people that come from other meditative backgrounds keep their eyes closed. Not so good. I remember being at Tassajara and sneaking into a beginner's instruction on Zazen and listening to Fu Schroeder give an instruction. And she emphasized on keeping the eyes half open, looking down about 10 to 20 feet in front of you in a vague sort of way. And I remember a student asking her, well, I like to keep my eyes closed. What happens? Here's what happens, and here's what Fu said. You fall asleep, one. But more importantly, I think, that I've taken to heart and to my practice for the last many years is that she said, and I quote, you enter the cave of demons with closed eyes. And I welcome you guys to try closing your eyes and having your thoughts run down instead of having your thoughts run amok in the cave of demons. If you keep your eyes closed, you will definitely have a hard time letting go of your thoughts. The next thing that I emphasize, and I learned this from reading Thich Nhat Hanh, smile. Smile especially if you're having difficulty in Zazen. A smile will, perhaps it'll open the pathway to letting endorphins flow across your body and you get a better chance at relaxation. Smiling in the face of pain or disharmony is a very courageous act. So I try to smile. It's more difficult now that I have a Parkinson's diagnosis. For some reason, Parkinson's has a mitigating factor on the muscles in your face. But smiling while you're sitting Zazen, a half smile, a Mona Lisa smile, will open a gate of ease and joy. I guarantee it. You can write me a letter or an email if it doesn't work for you. Try smiling, especially in your most difficult moments of Zazen in a Sesshin where things have been difficult. Try it. I first came to Zen practice in the late 70s by doing a Sesshin at Mount Baldy Zen Center, a Rinzai Zen Center that no longer really exists. Under the tutelage of Joshu Sasaki Roshi. And I came to the Sesshin without ever having sat a period of Zazen before. I knew nothing about how to sit Zazen, what to do, how to get into the Zendo or anything. But one of the most important things I learned from my first Zazen instruction was how to breathe, how to put your concentration in your breath. So I've been working on how I breathe ever since those days at Mount Baldy. And it's a rhythmic breathing that first I start by letting go of the air in the top of my lungs. This is all in one motion. And then go down to the bottom of your hara. Inhaling, and then push it out the opposite direction from the bottom to top. I did a sesshin with Omari Sogen Roshi, who was at that time the head of the International Zen Dojo in Honolulu, and he emphasized the hara, the area between your belly button and your pubic hair area, holding your strength there. And the type of breathing that I am advocating is for you to start at the top, then put all your strength into your hara, exhale completely, inhale from the hara, fill up your whole body, fill up your whole lungs, sorry, and then exhale again. As time goes on during a long sit, you may find that your respiration count really goes down. Whatever is your baseline, it may easily go into half that. So don't be afraid of having your breath and your respirations count go really way down. That's the way I sit Zazen. When I find myself going to the supermarket in my mind, I go back and start the checklist again, starting with my eyes, my smile, my breath, and one of the most important things now is the mudra. I have tremors and I've begun to have them mitigate my mudra. And so I have learned how to relax from my shoulders down. I wish I had learned this many years ago. But if you relax from your shoulders, you can put more strength in your mudra. Michael Wenger, my Soto Zen teacher, taught that you hold your mudra so lightly that your thumbs actually don't touch. But they're held in a way that the energy can flow from one hand to the other, but your mudra doesn't actually touch. Any questions so far? Ask me anything. No? Okay, well then, oh, please.
So what would you think is a good posture for, like, if you have, like, knee pain or you have tension in your hips?
Some people are blessed with loose hips and some people are not. I'm not blessed with loose hips. I had to work on it for many years. But get up as high as you can. Stack your cushions and use firm cushions. Don't use soft cushions where you sink into the cushion. Use two support cushions. Do I have support cushions here? Yeah, you do. You have a stack of them. Use two support cushions and use a very firm zazen, zafu, and don't force it. Letting your hips stretch out over a period of years is really good. In the meantime, rotate, sit in a chair some, sit in seiza some. How's your seiza? Is it your quadriceps? Are your quadriceps tight? It's still tight in seiza as well. Yeah. Sit up, be up as high as you can and work your way down. I hope that helps. So we have lots of time. I thought that I would talk a little bit about koans, if you wanted to hear about koans. I've done a lot of koan study, and most recently I've studied with a teacher from the Pacific Zen Institute, John Tarrant teacher. Maybe I should back up. I first came to Zen in 1978 or 77. I came to Zen Center in San Francisco in the middle 80s and started sitting Soto Zen style and sat at Zen Center Soto Zen style chicken taza for 20, 25 years before I returned to koan study. And during my second koan study, I realized that the miscellaneous koans of Hakuin, which are the beginner koans in Rinzai study, are very similar to the koans that Sasaki Roshi gave to his beginning students in the early 70s. Sasaki Roshi emphasized subject and object joining together. He used to say 1 + 1 = 0. So he would give you a koan where you would completely give yourself over to another person or another object or another thing. Something like, how do you realize singing bird? And that's very similar to Hakuin's koan. How do you stop the temple bell? Miscellaneous koan of Hakuin's, how do you stop the distant temple bell, is answered by you becoming the temple bell. It's not by trying to figure out a way to go and stop it, but it's by becoming the temple bell itself. So the answer to that koan is something like, ding dong. You have to completely become the temple bell. The answer won't be accepted if the teacher thinks you're saying ding-dong frivolously. But if you're saying it, or you're completely becoming the temple bell, you've stopped the temple bell. Sasaki Roshi's koan, how do you realize singing bird, is answered similarly by tweet, tweet, becoming the bird completely. So there's nothing between you and the bird. You are the bird. The deeper you would get into 1 + 1 = 0, Sasaki Roshi would have you become completely with an activity. How do you realize Buddha when driving on the Santa Monica freeway? You give yourself completely over to the car. There's no words spoken, it's just... This is the way you answer most koans when the Blue Cliff Record or the Gateless Gate. You become completely one with the koan, physically, mentally. You don't try to figure it out with using your intellect. You just become completely one with the koan. I'm brief. I like to leave a lot of time for questions. Questions on koans? Please.
For a couple of years with a teacher in the Aikens tradition, I didn't get anywhere. I didn't pass. Then I asked to be released.
And were you released?
Yeah, she gave me Shikantaza as a koan, kind of. And then I'd go to interview and she said, say something about Shikantaza, but then I just laugh because in Soto Zen we don't objectify Shikantaza, so
absolutely.
I didn't know what to say. And then she finally said, there's koan people and there's Shikantaza people, and I'm a Shikantaza person.
My teacher in Soto Zen talked about Shikantaza, and I sat Shikantaza for many years, and interchangeably with Mu is the answer, where are the edges? Where are the edges in Shikantaza? How far does it go? There's no edge. It's vast. So you've experienced that in Shikantaza for many years. The only step that you didn't take was expressing it. But the expression of this is perfect. You just did it. Anybody else? Please. I'm boring if I don't ask questions. How about the online people?
Yeah.
Many of them know me, so they'll try to trick me.
What happens when we feel disappointed in our zazen?
So you want to put something extra into the line of fire. It's like when you feel disappointed, you're putting an additional observer. You know, there's the observer that's observing, and then there's the observer that's observing the disappointment, and objectifies the disappointment. You know, it's common though, Peter. I've sat over 30 sesshins, maybe as many as 50, and every sesshin I've ever sat, at some point, I feel sorry for myself. I feel sorry for myself. And every time I feel sorry for myself, I have to go back and take a look, and I see this extra observance, a duality observance. It's not working. Instead of just being with it, you know. Sometimes you can feel disappointment, but you don't have to objectify it. And then it's still part of the vastness, the no edges. I hope that helps. Jerry?
I refer to Lou, whose hand is up.
Oh, Lou? I didn't see your hand.
Hi.
Hi.
I appreciate your discussion of posture and how to sit zazen. In addition to sitting zazen, I also like to do walking meditation, and I'm not talking just in the zendo, but on my own when I'm outside or someplace else. Do you have specific ideas or instructions on the best way to do walking meditation?
Well, I don't know if this is right or not. But there came a time in my practice where I began to be able to go walking and not have thoughts. But I had to say to myself, start the mechanism. Start the mechanism. Did you know where that comes from? There was a baseball movie with Kevin Costner, where he was a pitcher, and he would, before he would ever throw every pitch, in order to concentrate, he would say, start the mechanism to himself. So when I was walking, I would say, start the mechanism to myself, and I was able to enter the vastness and just walk and just enjoy it. But for a long time, I needed the kickstart of saying to myself, start the mechanism, instead of walking to myself and daydreaming about blueberries and dogs. My favorite two topics. Does that help, Lou? Okay, Jerry, you don't get away this time.
I find that in walking, if I can find a tree-lined path, even in a city street, it helps me start the mechanism. Like finding something that is repetitive and brings you out of your thoughts. And it becomes habitual after a while. You recognize a tree, at which point, oh, I'm supposed to be here, not lost in my head. And they're the mechanisms for which you're saying start the ways of starting the mechanism are indeed critical and useful. So thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, there's a reason that some of the old Zen koans take place in the mountains, and going out, you smell the fresh blossoms, and coming back, you smell the sweet grasses. Those are walking into the garden here at Canon Doe. You wouldn't believe the garden that's in the backyard here, y'all. It's incredible. Just walking out there, you have the butterflies, the flowers, the birds, and in the distant, over the hill, or not even over the hill, 200 yards away, you have the Muni, the Caltrain, and it's but that's all part of the vastness. The catalyst is the garden, but then to be able to accept and vroom, without judging it, without saying, that's Caltrain. And then the second step of your habitual mind is, I don't like Caltrain. It's disturbing me. So if you can just stay at and not go to, not make the language leap to, that's Caltrain, and I don't like Caltrain, then you're experiencing the vastness, this very moment.
I have a question. Oh, this is working? Okay. Thank you, Jimmy.
You have to talk
loud. Oh, sure. Thank you for sharing your sashing. I'm curious about that. During the sashing, the moment you despair, you know, and also the moment who is observing? Are you, I know this is like object, subject, mm-hmm. object. Anyway, I think the moment that you despaired, right? So can you describe that? And also another question is, in daily life, just like today, you are experiencing the garden. So that moment versus your sashing, you're despairing. You know, you're despairing in two situations, right? One is the sashing, the other is you despair in this garden. What's the difference?
Well, there's no difference if you're doing it purely without the observer, without creating duality, without saying, I don't like despair. I don't like despair is the same as I don't like Caltrain.
That's totally fine. I'm just saying, is there any difference between the sashing merging versus you merging with this garden? So, which means be with this garden.
Be with the garden.
Is it a sashing? Is it?
It is.
Okay.
If I'm understanding your understanding of the word sashing.
Yeah, sashing is a 7-day intensive meditation. Yeah.
During a 7-day intensive
meditation,
and if you experience despair. If you experience despair without judging and without running away from it or running to it, without making it a big deal, It's just despair. It'll go away, just like the Caltrain will.
I understand. Yeah. But I'm curious about this everyday moment versus sesheng, 7 day.
That's, I understand.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think, I used to think that during an intensive 7 days, you were open to more dharmas, whether there be despair or incense smoke.
But there's no dharma when you despair. There's nothing.
She's right, you know.
I was wondering, on motivation, like I have a hard time with turning to things when I'm struggling, but then not bothering once I'm not. So, I mean, a 7 day sesheen would certainly, you know, keep you struggling a little bit, but just as far as trying to put myself into action or avoiding harmful actions. But then once I've accomplished what I'm trying to do, I just kind of let it go. And so, like, you know, and then, or just set up some busyness, like struggle to get to the Zendo on time and be 1 minute late every time, because that's just part of the game, whatever, like, but if I, like, again, like, sort of, again, disappearing and having no platform if I'm not struggling. So it's kind of like the comfort of the despair that you've got, as opposed to like learning to get past that despair. Like I just kind of, you know, trying to like reach out to somebody, and once I'm actually comfortable with them, just leaving them because there's nothing to try anymore. But that kind of leaves me lost again. So I don't know. I was wondering about that kind of thing. Like, how would you advise on trying to make more durable the nothingness that you might want to get and retain?
You're objectifying nothingness. You have to stop objectifying it.
Okay.
And just let it be.
Okay.
Don't let it control you. Don't try to control it. It just is.
Okay.
I didn't mean to get into this conversation about emptiness. This is too heavy.
It's nothing there. I think.
But there's some really outstanding questions here.
Somebody named Nada has a question.
Nada?
Hi, Jamie, it's Fatma.
Oh.
Hi.
Hi.
So I had a question. I've been studying koan with you for a while. And I notice whenever I read the koans, I don't know how to go about it. So it's almost like I just want to know the answer. So I read the commentary. I wanted to know, since, you know, you like talking about koans and you have a long history, like you have a study of koan, how do you go about studying koan?
Well, it depends on whether I understand the metaphor or not. I have to read the commentary too if I don't understand the metaphor. I'm not an expert in 10th century Chinese poetry or metaphors or imagery. So sometimes I have to read the commentary, and sometimes I have to read two or three commentaries before I can understand it. I really, really like Hakuin's commentary in The Secrets of the Blue Cliff Record by Thomas Cleary, or translated by Thomas Cleary, as a great starting point. But I also think Matthew Sullivan is pretty, pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, when I read a koan, I try to figure it out. And you know, Fatima, I have the benefit of collaborating with 30 of you. And by the time I get to you and Muhammad with the koan, often I've had the benefit of Peter and Lou and lots of people, and I've been instructed by them as well as Hakuin. And I didn't say there was no Zen. I didn't say there was no Zen teachers. I just said there's no Zen. It all comes from all of these people. I get wonderful teaching from all of y'all, and I really feel that I've developed as a teacher because of your teaching me. So that's what I think. Yeah. That's my answer. You're the teacher. Aaron.
Following up kind of on that question, how does one begin koan practice? It sounds like from that conversation that reading koans is also, does it always have to be something between a student and a teacher?
I prefer the term collaborator because I don't see myself as a teacher. Teacher, I see myself as being taught as much as anybody else. But if you have a good collaborator or you have a good Zen Rinzai teacher, it will open up your shikantaza. I really believe that. It'll open up your shikantaza. You'll be a better Soto Zen practitioner. I think some of the schools that we have here in the United States really do work with koans. Suzuki Roshi worked with koans, so with certain students. Give my email address from Diane, and I'll see if I can recommend to you somebody who would be willing to work with you on Zoom, and you can go from there.
Thank you.
Sure. You look like you have a question.
No. I haven't concerned myself with koans ever.
Okay.
To me, they're kind of silly.
Oh.
I have a hard time finding the profundity in them, so I just kind of disregarded them.
Okay.
Could you repeat the question, please?
She doesn't see the profundity in koan studies, so she's disregarded them. It wasn't a question. I was trying to get her to ask me a question, and we didn't have a question there.
I was struck by how specific your instructions were for Zazen, and I wonder to what extent that represents an attachment to form. I find that if I keep my eyes open, I'm in the cave of demons. I cannot focus.
You find if you keep your eyes open, you can't focus? You close your eyes? Well, if it's working for you, I'm for it. I endorse it. There are specific endorsements of different things, but they're for right now. They might not have been the same things that I'll do 5 years from now or I did 5 years ago. It's just what's going on now. And it's just my way of encouraging you to sit, maybe. Just always keep your mind open. Don't get attached to keeping your eyes open or closed. Just be ready for the sucker punch. Anybody else? Oh, yeah, Brian.
Do you like the work of Yogi Berra?
Well, it ain't over until it's over, and I may call it over any time now.
Okay. Come to the fork in the road, you got to take it. Well,
that's absolutely right. You got to take it.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's KANNONDO.ORG.